display wasn't for me or any woman in the room. It was aimed at the other men. If you think that's sexist, you're right, but it's still the truth. Men do not see women as physical competition, with rare exceptions. Magda was one exception, but she was the only one in the room. Even Pierrette, who was fast enough to hit almost anyone twice before they could touch her once, wouldn't make Nikki posture like this. It was almost as if something about teaching with Jake had freed my big were-lion to be as masculine as he wanted to be with no apologies. It made me wonder just how much my attitude dampened down this part of him. We all moved our stretching to the edges of the mat, so that Jake and Nikki had the center of the mat. Nathaniel and I moved to Magda and Sin, and he happily helped us make sure we were all sitting together. Some of the other people in the room had just stopped stretching to watch our two instructors. Jake smiled out at everyone.
"We're going to spar today."
"I hate sparring,"
Nathaniel whispered. I glanced at his suddenly unhappy face. His lack of aggression in practice meant that he was really bad at sparring.
"I love sparring," Sin said.
There were a few others who made noises against it like Nathaniel, but not many. Sparring was a safe-ish way to learn how to fight in the real world, or to find what you needed to work on the most. Almost everyone in the room made their living from some form of violence, which meant we all needed to be better at it, or at least better than whoever was trying to hurt us. Even Sin used aggression to help him focus and be better on the football field. Only Nathaniel had a job that fight practice probably wouldn't help him be better at. If he had needed to be in better shape for taking his clothes off on stage, then MMA would have been a great workout for him. But Nathaniel was in fabulous shape already. Magda wasn't one of the people who groaned. She was like me. We came to the gym to work out, not whine. Besides, we were women, and there's only one way to be successful in martial arts or combatives, and that's to be as tough as the men. Or tougher. Is it fair? No. Is it still true? Yep.
"You are improving on sparring, but your groundwork needs more attention," Magda said.
"And if someone throws me, then I'll get to work on my grappling and groundwork," Sin said.
He wanted to get better at anything he tried to do physically. Nathaniel sighed heavily. This was the first physical thing where he whined and complained. He really did hate it, but my life was too dangerous to have someone in it who couldn't do the minimum in self-defense. Jake motioned Scaramouche to come join them in the center of the mat. Scaramouche stood up, his long black hair in a tight bun at the nape of his neck. He always looked tall, and in regular clothes he looked slender, almost delicate, and always elegant, like he was some Maharaja son gone off to the West to dress in designer clothes and forget everything he owed his family in India. Shirtless, wearing nothing except workout shorts with all that medium brown skin showing, he looked lean, muscled, and much more warrior than spoiled prince. He walked onto the practice mat like he had springs in his feet and legs. He still looked delicate compared to Nikki, but he also looked fast, strong, and was giving off his own version of come-and-get-some energy. When he bowed to Jake, muscles played in his back and across his shoulders. He didn't have Nikki's bulk, but it would be a mistake to think he was weak. Jake bowed back as a sign of respect, but he was careful to keep his gaze on the other man. I knew Scaramouche had done the same thing when he bowed without having seen his face. It didn't take long for you to learn that taking your eyes off any potential opponent on the practice mat at the dojo was a mistake. Nikki and Scaramouche put on pads, shin guards, and fight gloves. The gloves were padded on the front of the hand, but with bare fingers so they could grab and hold on, but not tear their hands up as badly as they would without protection. They bowed to each other, and this time I could watch them watching each other. I felt Nathaniel tense beside me. He leaned in just enough for his bare shoulder to touch my arm. Now that he wasn't having to worry about sparring himself, he was worried about Nikki. I was a little surprised that Jake had let his teaching assistant spar with anyone rather than just instruct. That must have meant something was up. Maybe there'd been more than one reason for Jake to tag Nikki to help him today. I looked around and realized that there were more Harlequin here than normal. And most of them were ones like Scaramouche and Pierrette, who had made it known that they weren't entirely content here in St. Louis. Hortensio, the animal half to his vampire master Magnifico, was sitting near Pierrette, much as we'd moved closer to Magda and Sin. Some of the Harlequin had been given their names by their dead queen, but others had chosen their names with permission of their queen. Magnifico was one of those. So I guess if that's the name you choose, your ego is going to be large enough that you are going to be a problem. Hortensio reflected his master's attitudes in almost every way, which made him seriously irritating without his master's suave and debonair manners to offset it. Funny how most of the Harlequin who had kept the names of their masked alter egos, the names they killed under, were all pains in our asses. Nikki and Scaramouche both dropped into a fighting stance, but it wasn't the same one. I knew Nikki didn't always telegraph his fighting style like that, but the two men had fought before and had watched each other spar with other guards. They had no deep, dark fighting secrets from each other. It was a plus to know your fellow soldiers' strengths and weaknesses, but it was anything but if you actually had to fight against them and not with them. Nikki knew that, so he wasn't trying to be coy. Nikki feinted a kick at Scaramouche's leg, and the were-rat returned the favor, but neither of them put much power behind it. The were-rat feinted a punch at Nikki's face. He bobbed to the side, letting it go past, and then Scaramouche moved in a blur of speed with his other hand. Nikki's arm was just in front of his face, blocking the other man's fist. I hadn't even seen him move to block. It was like magic. Scaramouche tried to follow with a punch to Nikki's ribs, but the werelion blocked with his elbow and moved just enough so that missed too. Scaramouche gave himself some distance from the other man, hands still raised up protecting his face, elbows tight in over his ribs.
You should not be that much faster than I am, lion. I'm the Rex of our pride, rat. It doesn't matter. You are not Harlequin. You should not be faster than me.
Nikki faced him with his own arms up, elbows tucked tight against the side of his body. He was on the balls of his feet, almost bouncing in place. Someone his size shouldn't have bounced like that either. He'd always been more agile than he looked, but I agreed with Scaramouche on the new speed. I'd never seen Nikki move like that.
Don't you mean that you shouldn't be this slow?
Nikki said. His voice already held an edge of growling to it.
Yes, that is exactly what I mean, lion. Only the Harlequin are so swift that another were-animal cannot see them move.
Scaramouche kicked at him, but Nikki moved out of the way of it. No need to block. Scaramouche moved in suddenly with a rain of blows and kicks that were just a blur of motion. I couldn't follow it all, but it was as if Nikki's hands, arms, and legs were just there, where they needed to be. Scaramouche was a dark blur, but Nikki was so fast my eyes couldn't even see the blur of his motion. The last time I'd seen anyone that fast had been some of the Harlequin before we killed their Dark Queen. All but one of those particular Harlequin had died rather horrible deaths, so the preternatural wonder speed hadn't helped them all that much, but I'd never seen one of our people be this fast. Frustration in a fight can lead to four things. You give up, you fight harder, you fight worse, or you cheat. Scaramouche was Harlequine. They didn't give up. He fought harder, but when that didn't get him past Nikki's guard, his arm swung a little too wide. Nikki landed a fist on the exposed ribs. I felt the warm rush of power, and for the first time it was my inner rat that responded to the energy as Scaramouche lashed out. Nikki rocked back and his cheek was bleeding, but Scaramouche hadn't hit him. I'd have seen that. Jake was between them, moving so fast it was as if he'd just appeared to separate them.
No claws. You know that, Scaramouche.
I saw the claws curling from the fingers of his gloves now. Both hands had sprouted claws, which meant he was powerful enough to shift just that much and no more. Micah could do it, but he was Nimaraj. Nikki couldn't do it, and he was Rex. Nikki touched fingertips to the small cuts on his face. He'd kept the claws from doing much more than touching his skin. Jake started to stop the fight, but Nikki said,
Let's do this. No claws, no shifting, Jake said.
Only because the Rex is not powerful enough to do a partial shift.
And you aren't good enough to beat me without shifting, Nikki said.
Scaramouche made a low, evil sound that I think was a rat equivalent of a growl, because again a small, dark-furred shape inside me reacted to his beast.
I can defeat you without changing form.
Prove it, Nikki said.
Jake made the were-rat show his hands, making sure his fingers were just human digits again.
Are you certain you both want to do this?
Jake asked.
Oh, yeah,
Nikki said. Very much so, Scaramouche said.
If you bring out your beast again, I will finish the fight in Nikki's place. Is that clear, Scaramouche?
The were-rat's eyes widened a little, but he bounced in place to loosen his body up and said,
I will defeat the lion fairly.
Scaramouche,
Perrette said, but he ignored her as if she had not spoken. Nikki did his own bounce. Jake stepped back and said,
Fight!
They took Jake at his word. Even blocking the punches and kicks had force to it. They both made harsh, involuntary noises, but there was none of the yelling that they teach you in some martial arts classes. Yelling when you didn't have to was for show. The two men weren't putting on a display. This was a fight, a real fight. Only their combined skill kept it from being even more violent, because neither was able to get through the other's guard. They were both so fast, I couldn't follow all of it. Nikki's fist came through all Scaramouche's punches and caught him in the mouth. It staggered the were-rat, and I saw blood. Nikki followed it up with a hook to the ribs that he blocked, but Nikki landed a knee to the other man's thigh. Scaramouche covered up as much of himself as he could as Nikki blew into him, raining punches, kicks, and elbows down on him. People were looking at Jake to step in and call it, but he didn't. Scaramouche came up under everything that Nikki was throwing at him and hit him with an uppercut right on the chin. He'd taken the damage until Nikki got carried away and gave an opening, and then he'd gone for it. It staggered Nikki and rang his bell hard. If it had been a real UFC fight, they might have called a knockout because his one blue eye was not focusing. He was still standing. Scaramouche came up and around with a roundhouse kick aimed at the side of Nikki's head. Nathaniel's hand squeezed mine tight. Sin gasped. Nikki's hand was there just in time to keep the kick from connecting and to grab the leg and get a joint lock on the knee. Scaramouche dropped to the ground trying to unbalance Nikki, but the were-lion had more mass and stayed firm. Scaramouche ended up with his hands on the mat as he swung his other long leg up in a kick for Nikki's face. Nikki didn't try to block it. He finished the joint lock. I heard the wet, meaty pop. Scaramouche screamed even as his kick bloodied Nikki's mouth. Jake stepped in then and stopped the fight. He helped Nikki lay Scaramouche on the mat. His leg was bent in a way that legs aren't meant to bend. Scaramouche was trying not to writhe in agony. He looked green with pain and was probably trying not to throw up. Pierrette knelt beside him. Hortensio stood glaring at Jake and Nikki.
What was that supposed to be?
That was not sparring, Pierrette said from where she knelt.
No, it was a lesson,
Jake said, and his voice was as cold and threatening as I'd ever heard it.
A lesson about what?
She demanded, holding Scaramouche's hand.
That the Harlequin must learn to respect our new comrades in arms, he said.
Scaramouche's voice was strained with pain.
They have not spent centuries earning our respect.
Nikki took out his bloody mouth guard and said,
I'm fine with earning your respect by beating the shit out of you. You are not king over me, lion,
he said between gritted teeth. I'd walked out on the mat with Nathaniel shadowing me, though I'd made him drop my hand. Tempers were high, and I wanted both my hands free just in case. Magda and Sin were at my back. I wasn't sure how much help Sin would be, but the lioness at my back would make them think twice before doing something stupid in our direction. I'd have liked to think that I'd give them pause, but I knew better. Most of them considered me a poor substitute for their lost queen. No matter what my title was, I was just not good enough for some of the Harlequin. How about me? I'm supposed to be your queen, I said.
You are Jean-Claude's fiancée, but you are not a vampire. How can you rule us as one?
Anita is Nimir Ra to the were-leopards, too,
Nathaniel said.
She is queen to Micah's Nimir Raj.
She does not shift into leopard form. I will not acknowledge a Nimir Ra who is trapped in human form,
Pierrette said.
She may not change shape, but she is still a necromancer and our new dark queen,
Jake said.
No, no, she is not. She is not our dark mistress. It was luck that allowed her to drink down the power that was ours, and now she has given it to him.
She pointed a dramatic finger at Nikki.
Not just him, Magda said in a low voice.
No, all the Harlequins that sleep with you and Jean-Claude have kept their powers or regained them, Pierrette said.
Hortensio made a sound that was half laugh and half snarl.
Scaramouche wanted to be your moiety bet, your rat to call, and your lover. He said he would show you what a true moiety bet can do for a queen. That boast is why your bride crippled him.
I glanced from Nikki to Jake.
Nikki said, Scaramouche bloodied me first. I just ended it.
I looked at Nikki for a minute.
Do you want him to think he can win you like a prize?
I turned back to Scaramouche. I'm sorry you're hurt, but even if you managed to take the crown from Raphael, your rat king, I would not make you my beast half or my lover. If what you want is to be closer to Jean-Claude's throne and me, then hurting my lovers gains you nothing. Green with pain, his leg bent damn near backward, he glared up at me from his dark brown eyes with more anger than pain, and more arrogance than I'd have been able to manage if it had been me.
I would make a better king for the rats, and do not turn down what you have not tasted, for I know that what I would serve you would be far sweeter than anything you have had before.
Wow, Sin said. With four of us standing right here, and you're going to insult all of us.
I know my worth, Scaramouche said.
Hortensio said to Sin,
You are a boy. He,
motioning at Nathaniel,
is a catamount more skilled with men than women. The Rex is as brutal in bed as he is in the ring. No woman wants that kind of brutality.
Nathaniel, Sin, and Nikki all laughed at the same time. I said, You've got to know your audience, and you obviously don't.
What about me? Magda asked.
You are a woman, Hortensio said. You are not competition in this arena.
I felt the warm rush of energy from her before the low, soft growl trickled from between her human lips.
You have always been a fool.
Hortensio took a step toward her, which put him closer to me, but he was looking over my head at Magda.
Back up, I said.
He ignored me. I hit him with a short jab in the solar plexus. He'd been totally unprepared, so it took all the wind out of him and doubled him over. I grabbed the back of his head and pulled it down as I drove my knee up as fast and hard and as many times as I could. I'd caught him completely by surprise, so he never even tried to fight back. When I saw blood pouring over my leg and onto the mat, I shoved him away from me and he crumpled to his side on the floor. He didn't move. His lower face was a mass of blood so thick that I wasn't even sure how much damage I'd done. I knew his nose was broken. His eyes were open, but like the punch that had staggered Nikki, they weren't focusing. Pierrette looked pale and a little less sure of herself. Scaramouche still looked angry and arrogant, in pain and nauseous, but there was something new in his dark eyes. I think it was uncertainty. He'd made his plans on the idea that I wouldn't be able to fight back. I think he was reevaluating that. Good. I am your queen, Hortensio. That means when I say back up, you back the fuck up.
I don't think he can hear you, Sin said.
Then Pierrette and Scaramouche can repeat it to him later. Right? I said, looking at Pierrette mostly. She let go of Scaramouche's hand and knelt in front of me, putting her head to the floor in front of my feet. It was about as low a bow as she could get. Her hands were politely back near her shoulders, so that her head was the only thing near my feet. It was the real deal, but then she'd had centuries to practice bowing in all sorts of ways.
She'll stay like that until you tell her to rise, Jake said.
That sort of works for me right now, I said. Jake made a little movement with his mouth like I'd surprised him, but pleased him at the same time.
You are the queen.
That's right. I am. And the next time one of you forgets that, it won't be my knee that I use to bloody you. Is that clear, Scaramouche?
Are you saying you will kill us yourself?
No, that is not what she is saying, Jake said quickly.
I don't want to kill you, damn it. It's a waste of centuries of talent and power, but if you force me to make the decision, I will.
I believe you, Scaramouche said.
Pierrette's voice was muffled against the floor as she said,
Yes, my queen.
Get up, Pierrette. She raised her head slowly, cautiously.
Do you wish me to stand, my queen?
Stay with Scaramouche or stand. I don't care. Just don't do anything stupid.
Yes, my queen.
You have tamed another leopard, Anita, Scaramouche said.
How about you, Hortensio? Are you still going to be a pain in my ass, or have I made myself clear?
He had his hands pressed gingerly over his nose. It made his voice sound odd, but it was understandable as he said,
Very clear, my queen.
I looked down. And you, Scaramouche? Are you tamed?
I will never be tamed by anyone, save my master.
Then are we clear? He wasted a serious, hate-filled look at Nikki, then looked back at me.
You and your bride have been most clear.
Great. Then we won't have any more problems between us.
We will not disrespect you, but we have a problem, our queen.
And what would that be? I asked.
That the people you are having sex with have acquired our old speed and skills, or regained them in the case of Magda and other Harlequin in your bed, while those of us not in your graces continue to lose both skills and power.
I opened my mouth, closed it, and looked at Jake. Is he right? Jake sighed, shrugged, and then said,
It is not 100% certain, but as a hypothesis, it has unfortunate merit.
Well, fuck, I said.
Not enough, Scaramouche said.
We can't fuck everyone.
If I cannot regain my former glory with a plan worthy of a warrior and a king, then I would agree to whatever arrangement Jean-Claude wishes.
I stared at the were-rat. Do you understand what you're saying?
Or is the pain speaking for you?
Jake added.
I know what I am saying, and for the return of my power, I would be whatever Jean-Claude needed me to be,
Scaramouche said. Pierrette just shook her head and looked scared. She wasn't willing to be whatever was needed, and I didn't blame her. That was too much carte blanche to give anyone.
I will not be Jean-Claude Catamite,
Hortensio said. His voice sounded worse as his nose continued to swell. He coughed and started to choke, having to struggle to sit up enough to throw up blood on the mat, which made his face hurt so that he moaned with the pain.
We need to get them to medical,
Jake said.
Yeah,
Nikki said.
They're bleeding all over the mat.
I looked to see if he was making a joke. His mouth was still bleeding enough that he was having to dab at it with the back of his hand. He'd taken off his gloves sometime during all of this. If he was being sarcastic, his face didn't show it. The marks on his cheek weren't nearly as bad as his mouth. Or everybody could shapeshift and heal themselves, I said.
They'll get goopy stuff all over the mats, Sin said. Claudia has told us we aren't allowed to shift in the gymnasium.
Fine, the hallway will work.
I dare not, my queen,
Scaramouche said. It's a dislocated knee. Shifting should heal it.
Yes, but in my beast form, I would need food to regain the energy I expended in the rapid healing.
Yeah, so you walk down to the area where the live food is kept.
No, my queen. If I shifted form, I could not guarantee that I would not see you and others as food for my beast.
Are you saying that you wouldn't have enough control of your animal form to keep from attacking us? I asked.
I am ashamed to admit it, but it is true.
You are the Harlequin, the ultimate spies and assassins. That means you have ultimate control over yourself, or that's what I thought it meant.
Once that was exactly what it meant, but when our powers began to fade, so did our control of our inner demons.
I looked from him to the other two troublemakers. Pierrette bowed her head and wouldn't meet my gaze. Hortensio was rolling around in fresh pain. Apparently he'd squeezed his nose too hard. Are you saying that none of you can control your beast half?
When we first turn, we must eat flesh. Once we have eaten, we come back to ourselves and can control the beast. But until that first feeding, we are mindless and will attack as if we are new lycanthropes who have not gained control of ourselves yet.
I looked at Jake and Magda. Is this true of all of you?
I have not diminished in my abilities, she said.
Because you are sleeping with them,
Pierrette said, her voice bitter. She stared down at the floor as soon as she said it, as if afraid of her own reaction.
Jake's face was as blank and unreadable as he could make it.
I have retained my abilities as well, and I am not sleeping with our new leaders. Kazim is also fine and not their lover.
Wait, Jake, Magda, are you saying that neither of you knew about this either? I asked.
I did not know,
he said. Magda just shook her head. You guys are supposed to report to Jake, I said, looking down at the others.
He is one of the ones who betrayed our dark mother, Scaramouche said.
Hortensio found his voice again, though it was thick and harder to understand as his nose continued to swell.
He helped hide the golden tigers from us. If they had been killed as the Mother of All Darkness commanded, then you would never have been able to rise to power. You had to possess the power of the Father of Tigers and become the new Father of Dawn, and for that, you needed the gold cats.
Scaramouche said,
Jake and Kazim were both part of the traitors who knew the gold tigers had not been slaughtered, and now that they have won, they still have their powers, while those of us who are ignorant of their plot do not.
So maybe it's more than just sex with Jean-Claude and the rest of us, I said.
Perhaps, he said, but not like he believed it,
or maybe he didn't want to believe it, because if sex wouldn't fix the problem, then they were screwed in more ways than one. Does Micah know about this? Scaramouche and Pierrette shook their heads.
We have told no one of our shame, he said.
If we had decided to send you out on a mission like Kazim just came back from, would you have told anyone then?
Nikki asked.
We don't owe you an answer, bride,
Hortensio said. Then pretend I asked it, because it's a good question and I want the answer.
None of the leaders here trust us enough to send us out, he said.
We are trapped here in this small city, when we had the world to travel for centuries,
Pierrette said, and she looked grief-stricken were the only words I had for the sudden haggard look on her eternally youthful face. I guess it is a change, I said.
If they cannot shapeshift safely, then we need to get them to the infirmary, Magda said.
If she felt pity for her fellow warrior's plight, it didn't show.
I would request a stretcher, for I cannot walk, Scaramouche said.
What have you done to deserve a stretcher?
Nikki asked.
Nothing, but I would humbly ask of my queen and her princes that they be magnanimous and show mercy.
I'm not big on mercy, Nikki said.
Nor I, especially for warriors who keep forgetting about me, Magda said.
Scaramouche swallowed hard enough that I heard it, and he said,
My queen, her princes, and her princess, I beg for mercy and to be allowed a stretcher.
I wasn't sure Magda was my princess, but I let it go. We were winning. Never quibble when you're winning. We let him have a stretcher. What the hell? We'd made our point.
Chapter 18. The medics insisted on Nikki going to the hospital in the underground along with the rest of the wounded. He insisted he was fine.
My mouth has stopped bleeding.
You could have a concussion, the doctor said.
Can we get concussions?
Sin asked. The doctor assured us it was possible, though unlikely, which meant Nikki got to go to the hospital, too.
I can shift to animal form and heal myself without endangering anyone else, Nikki said.
But if the concussion is severe enough, the shift won't heal everything. Let's do some tests before you change form and confuse the issue, the doctor said.
Reluctantly, Nikki agreed. The four of us were going with him, but my phone rang and it was Edward's ringtone. He was the reason that I'd had my phone with me in the gym in the first place. Hey, Edward.
Pack your bags for Ireland.
You got them to agree to bring me in on the case?
You and some of your preternatural friends, he said, and sounded pleased with himself. Take the call, Nikki said, and started to walk away.
Hang on a second, Edward. I caught up with Nikki, touching his arm so he turned toward me. I'd wanted to kiss him goodbye, but his chin and lower lip were still smeared with blood. The blood combined with the pirate eye patch made him look even more like a Bond villain. But he was my villain. Or maybe my henchman. He smiled down at me and leaned down to offer his cheek for a kiss, which I gave him. I take it your mouth is hurting too much for a kiss right now?
I like dishing out pain, not taking it,
he said with a grin.
Don't I know it?
I said. We can go with Nikki to the hospital so you can talk business, Sin said. I wasn't sure who the we included, and apparently neither were Nathaniel and Magda because they looked at each other. Nathaniel said,
I know some of the details of the case already, and it may have something to do with what's happening with Damien.
He's part of your triumvirate, I understand, Magda said. Stay. I'll go with Sin and Nikki.
Thank you, Nathaniel said.
It is not often that you ask for something like this. I am glad to see the three of you working things out, she said, and moved off to go with Nikki.
It was Nathaniel who remembered to ask,
Magda, did you go to Ireland on Harlequin business?
No. They were very isolationist for most of their history, and my master, Giacomo, could not pass for one of them.
I felt stupid once she said it, because Giacomo was the exception to the rule about the Harlequin. He went by the name he'd used as an assassin, but he wasn't a pain in the ass. He had been a Mongol from what would now be considered Mongolia. He lived there when being in a Mongol horde meant that you rode the steppes conquering or killing everything you met. If you didn't know his ethnic background, you'd still never mistake him for Irish, Chinese maybe, or Korean, or maybe even from some island in the Pacific, but he definitely looked Asian and not European. He was also almost as broad through the shoulders as Nikki, and it wasn't from weightlifting. Giacomo's basic framework was just that big.
That makes sense, Nathaniel said.
Do you know if any of the Harlequin traveled to Ireland regularly, or at all? I asked.
Pierrette and her master traveled there more than anyone else that I am aware of.
And Magda said it like that because they were spies, which meant that they didn't all know what the rest of them were doing. Spies mean secrets, and the fewer people who know a secret, the easier it is to keep. Only the Queen of All Darkness had been given all the reports, and when she fell into her centuries of sleep or hibernation or Sleeping Beauty curse or whatever it had been, then they reported to the Vampire Council. They had given reports to different council members depending on what they were reporting on, which made sense but didn't help us. Pierrette hadn't liked us before today's lesson. I doubted that watching her friends get beaten up had made her like us better. Of course it would be Pierrette who knows Ireland better than anyone else. Perfect, I said.
Do you have another vampire who knows Ireland? Edward asked on the phone.
Were-leopard, but who knows if she'll talk to us after we just beat the hell out of her friends.
Why did you beat up her friends?
He asked.
Long story. Order her to tell you, Anita. And she is oath-bound to do so, Magda said.
You're the queen, Anita. Act like it. Demand the information,
Edward said. It was a little unnerving that I was getting stereo advice from Edward and Magda, but I guess not surprising. They were both very practical most of the time. I shook my head. She's part of the world's oldest and maybe best spy ring ever. If she wants to lie to me, she can.
You can all control your breathing and heart rate, Sin said. But I swear that some of you can control your scent so it doesn't change when you lie.
Some of us can.
If we get Pierrette alone, we can scare her into telling us about Ireland,
Nikki said.
We must do it before her master wakes for the night, because once Pierrot is with his Pierrette, she will no longer scare so easily, Magda said.
She's probably still in the hospital area holding Scaramouche's hand, Sin said. And the doctor did say I needed to go to the hospital,
Nikki said. Sin smiled.
Can I help? Can you be scary?
Nikki asked. Sin seemed to think about it.
Yes, but scary enough to intimidate one of the Harlequin? Probably not. Can I watch the two of you intimidate Pierrette?
Magda clapped him on the shoulder hard enough to stagger him a little.
Come watch. Maybe we can teach you how to be scarier.
I'm not sure he needs that kind of skill set, I said. Nikki gave me a look I couldn't quite read.
It's always good to be scary, Anita, you know that.
I don't think that's true in the real world for most people, I said.
We don't live in that world, and we aren't most people, he said.
I'd have liked to argue with him, but I couldn't.
If they can learn anything that will help us solve the vampire problem here in Ireland,
Edward said,
let them scare the fuck out of her, Anita.
Do you want me to talk to you or go help them be scary?
I heard Nikki's voice, right?
Yep.
He doesn't need help being scary, and you and I need to start planning your trip to the Emerald Isle.
Sin came back while the others started toward the far tunnel entrance.
My mouth isn't too sore for a kiss, he said.
I frowned at him.
Stop being a hard ass and just kiss me.
The comment made me smile, and just like that, all my grumpy street cred went out the window. Hold on for just another minute, Edward.
Who's asking for a kiss? I don't recognize a voice.
Sinric, I said.
My, my, he sounds all grown up.
I'm putting you on hold, just so you know.
I wasn't going to critique the kiss over the phone, Anita.
Putting you on hold now, Edward. I turned back to Sin, standing so tall, and older, just like the deeper voice that had made Edward not recognize him over the phone. Magda called to him from the hallway.
Nikki says if you're late, we start the intimidation without you.
I'm coming, Sin called back.
He turned to me and leaned down for his kiss. I went up on tiptoe to meet all that 6-foot-plus height halfway. His lips were soft, gentle, but his hands where he gripped my arms weren't. He squeezed just enough for me to feel the strength in his hands that could throw a football far enough and well enough for colleges to scout him. Some combination of his hands and the kiss made me a little breathless as he pulled away. He grinned at the look on my face, and he knew he'd made my pulse speed up. He was a were-tiger. He could taste my heartbeat on his tongue. He jogged off after the others. He didn't want to miss learning to be scarier. Chapter 19.
You better take Edward off hold, Nathaniel said.
Oh, right. Nathaniel grinned.
I like that little brother can make you forget yourself like that.
You calling him little brother doesn't help me with the age gap issues, Nathaniel. Just saying. But let's go into the break room for the call in case someone wants to use the gym.
He is my brother of choice, and he is younger, Nathaniel said, as he walked toward the small room that Nikki and Jake had come out of less than an hour ago.
It had been a busy hour.
He's your brother husband. There's a difference, I said.
He held the door for me as I hit the button to take Edward off hold.
I said kiss the boy, not make out with him,
Edward said. I'm frowning at the phone, just so you know. He chuckled. I think I was one of 5 people on the planet who got to hear that sound from him.
I'm putting you on speakerphone, Edward, I said.
I sat down at the 4-seater table so we could lay the phone on the table, and both of us sit near the phone.
Who's listening with you?
He asked.
Nathaniel.
Since when do you include him on our phone calls?
I had a moment of not knowing what to say, but Nathaniel leaned into the phone and said,
Are you still wanting Damien to come to Ireland to help you?
Yes,
Edward said, and that one word was very clipped and not exactly friendly.
He's still out for the day, so I'm listening for his benefit so he can make an informed decision.
Don't you trust me to tell Damien the truth? I asked.
You'll tell him your truth, the cop truth. I love you, Anita, but you'll have solving the case as your primary focus.
Are you saying I'd manipulate Damien to get him to come to Ireland just so I could solve the case?
Not in the front of your head, but in the back of your head, yes.
You're saying I value the case over Damien's well-being?
If you can convince yourself that he won't be in that much danger, or that it would be good for him to confront his fears and he can help you stop the killings in Ireland, yes, absolutely.
Edward laughed, and it was a real laugh, the one that said he was truly amused.
Et tu, Edward, I said.
His voice still held an edge of laughter as he said,
We're both good at finding reasons to make people do what we want them to do, Anita. He's right on that.
Maybe. Are you okay with him listening in?
If you are,
he said, and him taking it so calmly surprised me.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Fine. Then I'll talk to you like Nathaniel isn't standing right there and he can interject.
Interject? I said.
I've been helping Peter fill out applications for college, he said.
So he's not going into the military right away?
His mother and I persuaded him to try a year of college. If he doesn't like it, he can still join up.
I was pretty sure that Donna had done more of the persuading than Edward had, but I let that go. I actually agreed with Donna on this one.
I'm glad to hear that.
It's easier to try college and then sign up for the military than the other way around.
Which is one of the reasons I sided with Donna on this,
Something about the way he said it made me let the topic drop.
Have you done any college visits? We did some with Sin,
Nathaniel said. He didn't know Edward's tone of voice the way I did, so he'd missed the "this topic is closed" inflection.
A few, but let's save old home week for later, Edward said.
Nathaniel started to say something, but I shook my head at him. He took the hint and let it go.
You said something about getting me and my preternatural friends into Ireland. What did you mean by that?
I asked.
You can bring your deputies like you did on the case in Washington State.
I said, outside of special circumstances, in the preternatural branch of the U.S. Marshals Service, I can't even deputize civilians in the country. How the hell did you get it to work in Ireland?
You can't call them deputies here, but you can still bring them.
To Ireland?
Yes.
Nathaniel gave me wide eyes because I'd discussed with him that no one wanted me to come play.
How? I wasn't sure you'd get me into the country, let alone me and extra people.
First, the Irish police are interested in seeing how well the shapeshifters work with us and them. Bring Socrates unless you think he won't work well with the rest of the group.
Because he's an ex-cop, I said.
Yes, I'd go with more ex-military and police if possible.
I'll do what I can. Will the guards who helped us out in Washington State be okay by you?
They'll do. And Nikki can always come play with us.
He's so not ex-cop or military anything, I said.
No, but he's good enough that I'd take him for backup even if you couldn't come with him.
Wow, that is high praise coming from you.
Just truth.
I'd have to remember to tell Nikki later, though he would probably just shrug it off and say, of course, or say nothing. I might not even be able to tell if it pleased him. It had tickled the hell out of me when Edward told me I was good enough for backup. But of course, my background and Nikki's were vastly different, and so were our reactions to certain things. Okay, Socrates and Nikki. Any other requests?
Lysandro? Claudia? Bobby Lee?
Claudia doesn't travel out of town with me, but the other two, check.
She came to Colorado.
She came with Jean-Claude, not me.
Okay, whatever. You can explain to me why that matters later, but right now just bring a small group that would play well enough with police and military to not make them regret the decision to let us come play.
But Nathaniel felt compelled to answer the Claudia question.
Claudia doesn't want the ardure to rise with her alone with Anita. That's why she won't travel out of town with her.
I gave him the look that oversharing deserved. It was not a friendly look. He shrugged and said,
What?
I'm beginning to like having Nathaniel on this call, Edward said.
I frowned harder at Nathaniel and then aimed it at the phone, too, as if Edward could see it. Truth was, he wouldn't have been bothered if he'd been there for me to glare at.
Let's concentrate on business, shall we?
I'm all about business, Anita, you know that.
I don't know how the hell you pulled this off, Edward.
We got lucky. They're thinking about putting their own preternatural unit together, but they don't want to simply duplicate the British unit. They weren't entirely happy with how the Brits handled the last time they had to call them for help.
Didn't they fight to get free of British control for a long time?
Yeah. So having to call in the Brits for help the last time they had a preternatural citizen go rogue on them didn't set well with the government or the popular vote.
Ah, I hear elections coming, I said.
It's not just the politicians, Anita. You have to know more of the history of the country to understand just how desperate they were to turn to their nearest neighbors for help.
Why didn't they ask Interpol for help? I asked.
Interpol's preternatural unit was tied up elsewhere and couldn't get there as quickly as the Brits could. To save Irish lives, they let their old conquerors into their country again. The president of Ireland and his party lost the next election because of it.
Wait, this was like a footnote in something else I read. It was a mixed group of lycanthropes, a human sorcerer, a couple of witches, and some fairies. I mean, fae, or whatever.
Important safety tip in Ireland. Don't call them fairies.
I know that, Edward, honest.
Just a reminder. Tell all your people to remember it, too.
Why can't we call them fairies? Nathaniel asked.
In old world fae, it's the equivalent of calling someone who's African-American the N-word, except that fae have magic to punish you for the insult.
Wow, really? It's that big an insult?
To some of the older fae in the old world, yes, I said.
What do we call them instead?
He asked. Edward answered, Fae, the gentle folk, the kindly ones. Little people has fallen out of favor, but some old-timers still use it.
The hidden folk is another one, I said.
Fae is shorter and more common among the police in most countries, Edward said.
I know that Ireland has kept the highest concentration of Fae in the world, I said.
But most of the wee folk are good citizens, or they just want to be left alone to do what they've done for the last 1,000 years.
Bullshit. There are still unseelie Fae over there, and they've always been prone to do bad things.
They don't see it that way, Anita. They think they're neutral like nature.
Yeah, nature is neutral, but a blizzard will still kill you, and there are a few types of gentle folk that really do like to hurt people.
But they don't because they don't want to be deported, he said.
I still remember reading in college about what it took for some of the European countries to deport the gentle folk. Massive magic, because they are tied to the land. You remove some of the folk and the land can actually start to die.
That would complicate things.
They didn't know it would kill the land back in the day, and they didn't understand that Fae that weren't tied to their land could go rogue in a big way, or the British didn't know. Apparently Ireland's Fae population was more wild and even more closely connected to the land than their British Isles counterparts.
And you remember all this from college?
Enough that I looked it up online briefly after you told me Ireland was a possibility.
You? On a computer, willingly?
Anita's gotten much better with all the tech, Nathaniel said. Hey, I've totally been won over to my smartphone, and it's a little computer. Edward chuckled.
Fair enough.
I wanted to refresh myself on some of what I remembered after I talked to you the first time. Some of the Irish believe that the Great Potato Famine and the British occupation not only lost them artists and writers, but their native-born psychics and witches, so they're pretty welcoming to anyone who's talented, except necromancers, apparently. Back when they let writers out of income tax, they did the same thing for anyone with a demonstrable psychic or magical ability.
That last is news to me.
It wasn't pertinent to you, personally, and except for me, I'm not sure you even work with people who are gifted enough to care.
True.
Marshall Kirkland raises the dead, too, Nathaniel said. Larry and I are two of the very few with any demonstrable psychic talent. I know your gifts help you survive and be better at your job. How do the rest survive without any psychic gifts? Nathaniel asked.
We manage, Edward said dryly.
I didn't mean you. You're Edward.
I actually understood what he meant by that.
You know, he's right. You are Edward, and that's better than magic any day. I just always assumed that Edward was just badass enough not to need magic, but that everyone else had some. Nope, I said. There's me, Larry, and Denis Luke St. John. Manny, before he retired. A couple on the West Coast and one on the East Coast, but everyone else is psychic free. Seems like it should be the other way around, Nathaniel said.
People didn't trust psychics when the business started, Edward said. It was too close to being a witch, and a lot of the old-time vampire hunters hunted witches, too.
We had a coven that went rogue a few years back here in St. Louis. They didn't have an order of execution on them, but the police called me in to consult anyway.
When the preternatural citizens go off the reservation, who are you gonna call?
Edward asked. Us.
Us, he said.
So the Irish want us to bring preternaturals over so they can see if they want to integrate them into their new homegrown unit. Is that it?
Something like that,
he said. I would remember later how he said it, and that I didn't question it at the time. This seems almost too good to be true, Edward. It gets us around the no-guns rule, the badges being American. Are they really going to let us bring in a bunch of non-police armed for big bad vampires?
That's the deal. Though I did have to promise them we wouldn't make too big of a public mess.
If it goes well, no one will know we were there, I said.
That's what I told them.
You said you had some contacts in Ireland. This is a hell of a lot more than just some contacts, Edward.
I told you we got lucky. One of the men in charge of putting the new unit together owed me a favor.
I had a moment to think about what it took to owe Edward a favor. I'd owed him one once upon a time. And he'd called me to New Mexico to hunt a monster that was doing worse than just killing people. He and I had both almost died that time. What kind of favor did he owe you?
You know I won't answer that,
If it's just because I'm standing there, I can put my fingers in my ears and hum, Nathaniel said.
It's not because you're standing here, Edward said.
He's not going to tell me, I said.
If you knew that, why did you ask?
Nathaniel asked. I keep hoping he'll get chatty.
When have I ever been chatty?
Edward said. Did the man who owed you a favor know you in the military or after you got out?
No comment.
Okay. I know you keep a secret better than almost any human being I know.
Almost?
He made it a question. I smiled, though he couldn't see it. Okay, you are the human champ of secret keeping.
Just human?
Vampires keep secrets better than anyone I know.
Is tall, not so dark and handsome, hiding things from you while you plan the wedding?
He's over 600 years old, Edward. I'll never know all his secrets, but no, I wasn't thinking of Jean-Claude. Just vamps in general.
And I'll let that go because you've told me all you're going to tell me,
he said. I laughed. Hey, I learned from the best how to keep a secret.
So I'm getting my own back. Is that it?
Yeah.
We got lucky, but we also had something that our Irish counterparts needed.
What exactly is that?
A mixed group of preternaturals who have worked with the police, or been police before.
How much does your old friend know about me and my people?
He's not my friend. More a work acquaintance.
Okay, so you didn't tell him much.
The minimum.
Which would be what?
You know how there's a certain group of military and covert operations that knows more about you than either of us is comfortable with?
You mean Van Cleef.
Did you really want to say that name in front of Nathaniel?
I've heard the name before, he said.
Donna doesn't know that name,
Edward said. Nathaniel was with us in Colorado when the name came up last.
When you told the story, it was just you and Micah in the room when his father dropped the name.
Micah and I thought it would be safer if Nathaniel knew the name.
I haven't told Peter either.
You like to keep secrets, Edward. I prefer to share information more than you do.
I know Nikki learned it in Colorado. Who else did you tell?
I was careful.
Who did you tell?
You tell me to stay away from any hint of Van Cleef. Are you telling me that he's involved with a new unit in Ireland?
Not him personally, but people like him. They're all interested in the fact that you seem to have all the benefits of being a lycanthrope without the side effect of changing shape.
Yeah, I keep being told that the military complex, not the military itself, but some mysterious powers that be, are fascinated with the possibility of super soldiers with some of my abilities.
Mainstream military has nothing to do with the idea, Anita.
I know they're still giving people medical discharges if they catch lycanthropy on the job.
But some of the firms that are more private security are very interested.
I thought your acquaintance was Irish police.
He is, but he wasn't always.
Military? I asked.
Yes.
Private security firm?
Yes.
I didn't think the regular military or PD liked you much after you were private security.
He's a native-born son of Ireland, come back with new skills and new money to throw at a project that the government wants done.
Money? Wait. Is he funding this thing himself?
No, but he's helping outfit it, hoping to prove the worth of the new weapons to the government so they'll order up his new gadgets.
Government contract would be a lot of money down the road, I said.
It would be, but that's down the road. Right now, he's spending a lot of his backers' money as an investment that may or may not pan out.
So it's a big gamble, I said.
Yes.
And we're going to help him win his bet.
Yes.
Is your... I can't keep calling him your acquaintance.
Brian.
Brian. Really? How Irish.
It's still his name.
Okay. Is Brian planning on following us around while we hunt the bad vamps?
He's planning to help us.
Can we kill the bad vamps when we find them?
I've got you in the country armed, Anita. One problem at a time.
Wait, Nathaniel said. Are you saying that Anita can't kill the vampires when you find them?
We think the vampires that are giving us issues in Dublin are the newly dead. We have some disappearances, but no one has been declared dead, so they're still legal citizens with all the rights of the living. Irish law doesn't cover vampires, doesn't even mention them.
What are we supposed to do when we find the bad guys, Edward? Arm wrestle them?
Humans, even ones with vampire bites, are to be treated like regular humans, unless they are actively trying to kill us. Then they become targets of opportunity.
What about the vampires themselves? Have they made up their minds what they're going to do when they find them if they don't kill them?
No.
That's insane, Nathaniel said.
The Irish cops really want to save the vampires that are murdering their kids? I asked.
The Irish are very serious about not taking life.
Figure out something lethal before we land, Edward. I'm not bringing over my people to be killed because someone in power flinches.
I'll do my best, but the local police like to be called peacekeepers, and they're serious about the title.
They can't have ever seen what vampires are capable of, Nathaniel said.
Most of them haven't, except for Brian.
There will be no peaceful end with these killers, Edward.
I'm not arguing that, Anita. But your reputation for necromancy isn't the only thing that the Irish have reservations about.
What else don't they like about me? I asked.
Your reputation for violence.
Yours isn't any better.
Actually, you've still got the highest kill count, so I'm less bloodthirsty than you are.
Great. So I'm the big bad whatever.
They're talking about putting a human officer with your preternatural friends while they're in Ireland.
A guard on my guards?
Think of it as more a battle buddy. If one of your shapeshifters does something unfortunate, the officer with them will be in trouble too, so they'll be motivated to keep everyone on the straight and narrow.
The way to heaven is straight and narrow, Edward. We aren't going that way.
Brian's been to hell, Anita. He'll be fine.
You and he have served together.
I didn't say that.
Fought together, then.
I didn't say that either.
Fine, damn black ops. But if you tell me that you've seen Brian handle himself, I'll believe you.
I trust Brian to hold up his end of any operation, but I don't know his men. I trust him to pick good people, but he's working with the government.
Which means what? I asked.
Which means that he may not have been able to pick his entire team. So be careful until we know they're as good as Brian.
I'll pass that word on to my people here.
Do that.
I'll finalize my team here and tell them the good news that we can bring our guns.
No explosives. If we need those, Brian's people will supply them.
I don't think I've ever traveled with explosives. That's your gig.
You used phosphorus grenades on ghouls and other undead.
Fine. I'll leave them at home. Besides, the European grenades you had in Colorado were a hell of a lot more destructive.
If we need them, Brian will get us some.
Good to know.
Pack and get in the air as soon as you can, Anita. I'll meet you on the ground in Ireland.
This would be so much easier if I weren't still afraid of flying.
I keep forgetting you're phobic of flying. I should take you up one day and get you over it.
Can you fly? I mean, are you a pilot?
I'll see you in the Emerald Isle, Anita.
Damn it, Edward.
Yes?
Nothing. Just keep your secrets and be all mysterious. You keep telling me I'm your best friend. You know, people don't keep this many secrets from their best friends.
I do,
he said.
See you across the pond, Anita.
See you there, Edward.
Goodbye, Nathaniel.
Bye, Edward.
You didn't tell me not to endanger Anita.
I know what Anita does for a living, and I know that she trusts you at her back more than anyone else. I trust her judgment.
That is not how my fiancé would have taken this conversation.
Donna knows what you do for a living, too. Nathaniel said.
She knows some of what I do for a living, but she doesn't want to know all of it.
Maybe. But Peter does.
He told me you and he have been talking on the phone,
Edward said.
He's wanting help putting together the bachelor party.
I'm your best man. Shouldn't I be planning that? I asked.
Do you really want to be planning my bachelor party?
No, but I'm not sure I want your 19-year-old son planning it either.
He asked to do it.
Edward said.
He's doing fine with the planning, Nathaniel said.
I admit I was a little worried how much you and Peter were talking,
Edward said. Why worried? I asked.
You think I'm a bad influence on him? Nathaniel asked.
No. According to Anita, that's my job.
I just don't think him going into the family business is the best thing, I said.
Before we got grandfathered into the Marshall program, he was going to be a vampire executioner. But now he'd have to go through the new training program. He's too young to go straight into it, so he's rethinking his options.
Does that mean he's not going into the other side of the family business either? I asked.
Not now, Anita.
You don't have to talk around me, Edward. I know what you do, or did, before you put on a badge,
Nathaniel said.
Do you?
Yes. Donna asked me to help talk to Peter about college.
So you were just pretending not to know that he'd agreed to try college?
I wasn't lying. I just didn't know Peter had made up his mind. He was still debating the last time we talked.
I didn't know you and Peter were such good buddies.
Edward's voice was not happy. It was a tone that would have made me afraid for